Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bad End Podcast, episode Siam, also known as 77. I'm one of your co-hosts, Kyle Cookstow, joined as always by my illustrious co-host, Josh Calixto of twitch.tv/Josh Calixto and Katie McCarthy of US Gamer. I say that because Josh started streaming like 2 weeks ago, like I think in earnest, maybe.
We're seeing what's up, but it's twitch.tv/real_Joshua. So if you do
want to specify
tune in,
it's the real
I'm going to start the fake Joshua Twitch account just to sort of like,
yeah,
you know, well, you can duel.
Mega yeah, Josh.
I'll restream all of your Twitch videos like mirrored so Twitch can't detect that.
Yes.
That's like old school YouTube piracy avoidance. They would like do stuff upside down because like the video algorithm like couldn't tell. Yeah. I miss the old internet, you know.
Or they would have good shit back then. They have like a video, but it's like a picture in picture type thing where there's like something else going on in the background so YouTube can't tell.
Twitch.tv/real Josh. What have you been streaming?
Real_Joshua. I've been streaming The Last of Us 2, which I can talk about a bit on this episode. We talked about it a lot a couple weeks ago, but I could do some spoiler-free stuff and a little bit more like high level.
Like we went the backwards route. We're like immediately after launch, we went full spoilers, no fucking courtesy to listeners.
Yeah, and I hadn't played it at all. So, I mean, but I don't know how much
more
effective.
It's sort of
hard
to talk about like without spoiling, though, based on what we talked about in that podcast.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
I feel like there's so much that just happens right off the bat that it's like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't envy the people that had to review it without like with all the restrictions where it's like, you cannot talk about jack shit.
You don't have to talk about plot.
I mean, not necessarily plot. Like, I mean, there are reviews out there that did a great job of, like, dancing around that shit. Like, Vice's review is really good. Polygon's review is really good.
Wired,
yeah. Julie's review is, like, probably the best one out there, for sure. So there are folks that definitely did a great job dancing around that. But I feel like talking about almost in a podcast form specifically, I feel like there's more words in general. Like, you can't just, like, not...
Yeah, it's like...
You kind of have to just like.
We're about to find out.
about to sling some words. You're going to throw words at us.
Did we introduce Katie? Did we introduce Katie?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
USGamer.net.
Yeah. It's me.
.com.
Katie, as always, I'm here.
Okay. Hi, Katie. So I did.
Guys, I'm going to say, listeners, we're feeling. I think all three of us are feeling the quarantine. It's sort of hard to bring yourself to just do stuff.
Honestly, yeah. I feel
just
like I've
that
like
for a second.
I've hit like my limit of quarantine time. You know? Like it's
yeah.
Take your mask off and just be like, I'm living now.
I have my mask right here. But I just held it up and I just remembered I don't have my video on because my internet's being wonky, so you guys can't even see that. And listeners wouldn't even get it at all.
Like where you remember in Changes by Tupac where he's like, we gotta start changing how we eat, we gotta start changing how. That's where I am right now. I'm like, I sat down, I took stock, and I did a full Tupac and was like, I gotta start changing. I'm going to Vegas
start
later
streaming.
This week. I'm going to Vegas later this week. Not because I want to go to Vegas to visit the strip or anything like that,
like,
but because
that seems dangerous.
No. I'm going to visit my cousins who live out there. So I'm just going to be in like the burbs and, they've been going like biking, like in the roads. So
that's
I'm going to be biking, cycling a bit, you know, just trying to get some physical activity in, trying to eat a little better, change how I sleep, trying to change how I game. Trying to change how I started streaming. I also streamed some Call of Duty. But so if you ever decide to check out real_Joshua, my Twitch stream, twitch.tv/real.
And that's you spell it underscore, right?
Sorry.
It's Josh, UNDR.
twitch.tv/real_Joshua. I have this cool little module that I switch to where when I'm playing a game, I could take notes. So I'm doing like live crit sessions and I took a bunch of notes specifically to talk about on Bad End Podcast. So
is it called, did you just open Notepad or like what's the,
it's just literally Microsoft Word. I just have like, I set up Microsoft Word as a source.
Not even GDocs.
I just have it clicked. Well, because then they might see my my Google account or something, data. And that's like a little scary.
Right, all that stuff. I see.
Microsoft Word's a little safer.
Your OneDrive account.
I don't have. It's only my name in the corner of the OneDrive account, so there's no like email or any other identifying characteristic. Anyway, so I did take some notes, here, and they're a little spur of the moment, kind of scattershot, but I want to go through some of this stuff because I've been so for the record, I don't want Naughty Dog to come from my throat here. The game is the game, as in like the game itself, playing the game, fairly enjoyable. To make some gamer criticisms here, I am fucking annoyed with how wobbly the shooting is in this game. It's
dude,
like
I watched some, like there was like some videos like the dude running around, and like I feel like I've never played a third person game on PlayStation that's ever felt tight. Like I feel like the defining feel
yeah, they're
of like
all
PlayStation
like a little
is like loose
wobbly.
Bro.
Yeah, it is very loose.
Dude, it's so hard to hit a bullet in this game. And I noted this in my notes, which is that it seemed okay, lack of control as mainstay element of survival horror, but holy shit, it's annoying when you can't even get your cursor where you want it to go. So it's like, you know how in Resident Evil, it's like, oh, I can't control my character. It's like tank controls and it's, I can't tell where I'm aiming and shit like that. That's yeah. like an element. Oh, that makes the game scarier because you don't, can't fully control your scare. No, this game is not really scary to me at all. I have not been really afraid of this game at any point in playing it. And I hate that when I try to aim my gun, the reticle is like swaying all over the goddamn place. And the fucking enemies like dodge shit constantly. It's like they're fucking, you have to be perfect. And then when they shoot you, they shoot you no matter how much you're running or jumping from cover to cover to cover. If you poke your head out for a split second, you get shot. It's really annoying.
Are you playing on like a gamer difficulty or is it just like normal?
I'm playing on normal.
Yeah.
Really?
Maybe it's going from Call of Duty to this.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
I've definitely
had that problem. Cause like, and then when I transition back into Call of Duty, I keep hitting like R2 to reload my gun. That's like not a, not a thing in Call of Duty. So I just shoot and I'm like, fuck. And
yeah.
So that's like a thing I do now, which is especially bad in Warzone. I will say, gamer tip, you should get the upgrade where you hold your breath while you're aiming.
Oh, that helps
a lot because it super stabilizes your reticle. Yeah, basically like it's like upgrade your lungs. Learn how to hold your breath. Here's that you have to like collect some like gears to learn how to do that apparently. But I found that to be so that and like the upgrading the silencer pistol thing attachment you can make like to 5 shots like so easy. It's so easy just to like breeze through sections once you have like have both those things nailed down.
Right. I find that a lot of the puzzles in this game, the quote puzzles, are basically like find the thing you can interact with challenges where it's like,
yeah, there's not really puzzles in the traditional sense.
Once you know like what you're supposed to, once you see the thing that you can interact with in the room, which is usually like hidden, it's like, okay, well, that's what I do. Like, it's very clear. It doesn't take much brain work to do these things. So it's just like, it reminds me of like point and click adventure games where you're just clicking on everything to see what's interactive. And in this game, it's like,
right,
there's 1,000 like things that you could try to climb up onto, but only one of them is climb onable because that's where they want you to go. And it's like, that's
it's
not
like there's
a puzzle.
A ladder there. It's like, why is it? It's like, oh, one stair is missing, therefore I can't climb it or something.
Yes. And there's a lot of gamey walls in this game where it's
like the 3/4 height, like the waist high walls.
No, well, there's a lot of that.
A lot of shrubbery.
Absolutely.
You cannot pass through shrubbery. This is
like
a wall.
You know where you're gonna about to fight. But there's a lot of like walls in this game that are like you can't pass through them. And it's only because like you have to go through the combat sequence first, you know, where it's like a gate to get to the next section, you know,
right,
where it's like, oh, I could should be able to walk past this wall or this like gate, but I have to complete this encounter first, which brings me to another thing that's annoying, which is that I hate that to see stuff, you have to do the game stuff. So theoretically, you should be able to play the game stealthily, right? Like, you can play whatever way you want. Like, you don't have to kill people if you don't want to. We give you the option. But if you want to, like, find out more about the lore or, like, collect items or, like, see the different storefronts that Naughty Dog spent hours and hours and weeks and months creating, you have to kill everyone. Or you can't just, like, explore the environment when there's like wolves or bad guys everywhere, you know? It's like,
right.
It's this thing where it's kind of like, you can't have it both ways. You can't explore and do a pacifist quote run through of the game.
Like, I was thinking about like some of the stuff we were talking about last time a little bit kind of brought this to mind, but like, I still really think about the like Assassin's Creed, it's Odyssey, right? That has the like tourism mode.
Yeah, Odyssey and Origins both to have like the historical something. It's like basically no combat. You just like walk through the open world and get like a bunch of historical
facts. That seems like so much work is spent on, especially AAA games now. And I think like the other thing about it is like, I don't want to spend $60 on Last of Us 2 because I don't care. But like, I see all the amazing tech and like the beauty of the game that they've done. And it's like, I'd pay like $5 or $10 of that to like run around in this world, or like, or even like Odyssey, I think it's just a separate mode. You still have to like buy the full game or whatever. But it seems like it should just be like a separate thing, or like you can kind of opt into it where it's like, and I imagine there's a lot of people, I mean, I would think there's maybe at least some people like me who don't, or like who can't, right? Like who want to see the story of Last of Us 2, but like can't handle, like Josh, you know, Mr. Gamer Fingers can't like handle the combat of Last of Us 2. It's, why not have people who can just sort of experience the story of the game? Because that's like, as we talked about last episode, that's like a big part of it. So, but like gating that through like what sounds like pretty difficult third person shooter encounters seems strange, maybe.
I mean, there are a lot of accessibility options. Like, there honestly might even be a skip combat thing. I have no idea. I haven't really looked into it. But, like, this, like, they consulted with, like, a lot of, like, activists in the accessibility space to get insight into, like, what they need to play a game. So it's, like, there's, like, text-to-speech functionality, and there's, you can literally tweak, like, every little thing. You can tweak, like, the scarcity of items. You can tweak, and, like, and you can also tweak, like, difficulty of, like, every little thing in that game. And on top of like the usual like colorblind modes and that sort of thing. So there's just like, there's like a healthy amount of modes, and there is like a straight up like just like super easy encounter mode that's like probably way easier than normal, obviously. And you could even bump up those settings. So it's like there is like an option for people that maybe, yeah, it's like I have friends who they don't play a lot of games, but they love Last of Us and they're really into Last of Us 2. And a lot of them aren't finished yet because it's so fucking long. So it's like taking people forever. But yeah, I think there are options for players that straight up just don't, that just want the walking simulator type part of it. Cause that's like one of my good friends like described it as like a really compelling walking simulator with just like some shooting in the interim moments.
But it's not a walking simulator, like that's the whole
thing. I mean, to him who to someone that doesn't play games, to him it was like that, like it was like a gone home type thing for him. And I was like, sure, I guess I can see that. I was like, I didn't agree, but you know,
I don't want to like argue with a person who's not here, but it just, I mean, I understand that what he's the person is saying, because the game outside of all the combat and gameplay stuff feels like it wants to be that type of like emotionally effective story. But that's why like the disconnect between like when you're observing this very meticulously thought out, like ambitious thing that Naughty Dog clearly wants to be considered a piece of art, there's a huge disconnect between that and then like the act of actually playing the game, you know? And it's, I think it's even, that gap is even wider because this game is like trying so hard, and they try to do these things that like bridge that gap that just come across to me as, it's just kind of corny. It's like fake. They do a lot of things in like proof. They're trying to like prove characters' humanity or like make you empathize with the character a bit more through these game systems or like character cues. So like one of the characters that this is not really a spoiler to say, I'm trying to keep this as spoiler free as possible. So unless I would say this is not a spoiler, but you play from multiple perspectives in this game. You do that in the first game too. So, I mean, why that shouldn't be too much of a surprise, but, one of the characters that you play as like collects quarters, and that's like, one of the characters' things, like
things.
You collect doesn't that make this character so much more human because they collect quarters? And then there's like having a dad is like a thing that is supposed to make a character more human, which is just kind of funny as like Naughty Dog's thing. It's like, this character has a dad that they are also friends with, like you should empathize with them. Being sad when murders happen, that is like a thing that happens in this game. They're like, this character feels remorse for killing a person. Wow. One of the characters, there's like a dialogue sequence where like one of the characters just offhandedly mentions like anime watching, like, let's just go home and watch some anime. It's like,
yeah, he's, that's just a like weird me line.
He watches,
yeah,
anime. Whoa. Yeah. But it's all tied to like game mechanics or like some offhanded line in the game where it's like trying to humanize the character or what's happening a little bit more. And specifically when it comes to the game mechanic stuff, it's like, I get what you're doing, but it doesn't work. It's not, I'm still waiting for the next cutscene to see what the character's humanity is, because like it works way better than any of the in-game systems for me. It's like collecting quarters does not make me empathize with this character anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel like this is like this feels like a problem that's sort of like that. I'm totally extrapolating here, and feel free to totally counter my point, but this sort of feels like one of the defining characteristics of AAA game development is this like want to tell a story and sort of the need to put mechanics in front of that story for better or worse. And like you like go back in time and it's, you know, before the first person shooter was dominant, like, you know, real time strategy was dominant. And like the same thing was being done by Blizzard where they had these like crazy stories and campaigns. And then it was like, okay, well now you have to play a real time strategy game until you like find out what happened to like Arthas. And then before that you have like adventure games, which are like adventures, like some are good and some are bad, but you know it's still predicated on like, okay, you want to find out more story.
Well, it's fucking Donkey Kong, dude, where it's like the beginning of the level, like Donkey Kong brings his princess up the castle thing or up the tower, and then you have to go get it, and then he goes to the next thing, and then she goes to the next tower, and it's like that's basically the prototype form of this, right? Where it's like, get to the next level, see some story play, keep doing that until you reach the end of the game, and then you see like what the conclusion of the story is.
Yeah, and it's just like, it sort of just tracks with whatever genre is like in vogue for AAA development right now. We're in a really weird time right now because a lot of this stuff like God of War and like what Naughty Dog is doing feels like it's sort of approaching like a different genre. I can't remember. I think I might have been Julie as well talking about the sort of notion of a prestige game. But I feel like stuff like this and like Death Stranding are starting to sort of like become their own weird like AAA island of stuff. That's not like the thrust of AAA. Well, like AAA is still looking at like Battle Royale and stuff as kind of like the next like spending a ton of money to make like a giant experience like that. And then no one's really done a story-driven Battle Royale yet, although someone's probably going to counter me on that. But I guess it's sort of weird that like these people who sort of grew up around the like Xbox 360, PS3 era have sort of like formed their own sort of like weird genre. Mm. And I'd be interested to know if like Naughty Dog kind of transitions out of this sort of style, kind of in the way I think Blizzard has actually done a really good job of, where Blizzard was like, you know, founded against strategy, like real-time strategy stuff. And I think like mostly successfully transitioned into and like innovated in some ways, like the digital, oh, not innovated, like kind of made the, gave a language and style to this notion of a digital card game that had been done before through Hearthstone, but then also took a lot of ideas from like TF2 and kind of like fully invented the like team-based or the character-based like arena shooter through Overwatch. And I feel like they're sort of like innovating around this area, but I'm interested to see if someone like Naughty Dog or I guess Sony Santa Monica or whatever, I guess probably Sony Santa Monica, but Naughty Dog specifically, it's like, will they stay here with this sort of game and style, or will like this new sort of like thing that's this like third person adventure plus mechanics, like what Kojima is doing with Death Stranding, sort of become its own weird like niche that eventually kind of fades away as well? Or are these companies, these types of companies like Blizzard, that will actually sort of like do different stuff in order to sort of stay with the zeitgeist? And that, like, I don't know.
I mean, I think the big disconnect between those two, what Blizzard does and what like Naughty Dog does, is that Blizzard has been doing this stuff with multiplayer gaming specifically, mm-hmm. where I think it's a lot different when we're talking about multiplayer, because the storytelling and a lot of, you know, what we talk about when we talk about a quote good game in multiplayer is all about the mechanics themselves. Whereas in the third person, in this third person adventure AAA thing, we're talking about like the story and telling an emotionally effective story and using gameplay to try to help you do that. And it seems like Naughty Dog is trying to go for like a really emotionally effective story that uses its mechanics to do that. I just argue that I don't think the mechanics are that effective. It feels like I'm playing a violent video game and then watching some cutscenes that remind me of Gone Home. And that's why I think it's easier to compare it to a walking simulator, is because the cutscenes remind me of what happens in a lot of walking simulators, but everything that is not a cutscene does not feel like walking simulator to me.
Yeah.
Except for the like patented Naughty Dog things where you're just like walking around.
Walking like
in a like a non-violent
walking while like
scene.
Things are happening around you, but you're not like interacting with any of it really, like Uncharted's always had that, like, that's really like a Naughty Dog trademark thing. And like when, you know, they walk by a wall and they might put their hand on the wall, you know, it's like the stupid, like, you know, it's like they're interacting with the environment, but not really. It's like basically just like a roller coaster, but you cannot like leave the premises whatsoever.
Yes. There's that stuff, those scenes where it's like you can't even pull out your gun and you're just walking through an area.
Yeah.
I almost consider that, I'm looking at that almost as like a the video game version of like an establishing shot or like beat. Like you know, where it's just like, all right, here's where we are. This is what's happening. And it's walking simulator stuff that is basically used to the same effect as like an establishing shot in a film or something. Like, this is where we are. You get a feel for the setting, immerse yourself in what's going on around you a bit, but we're going to get to like the real stuff in just a sec. So there's that stuff. So Katie, you and Emma last episode were talking about how, the, you know, the diversity of the characters and stuff like that, and how it is kind of funny that like they gave NPCs that you kill like POC names, and like you're clearly killing like characters that are not white, which is like a whole thing in this game. And it's fucking weird to me, man. Like, I also appreciate it, but I also find, like, maybe this is just me, but I feel like I'm killing a disproportionate amount of Asian people in this game. Like, there's a lot of Asians that I'm fucking murking in this game. A lot of Asian women. And it, like, I feel like I'm killing more Asian people. I made this joke in the Bad End Discord yesterday, but I feel like I'm killing more Asian people than I did in like Medal of Honor Rising Sun. It's like fucking insane.
Jesus Christ.
They're just like fridging people, dude. And it's messed up. And I'm like,
yeah, it's like, that's like, that's just, this whole thing is like the weirdest part of this game to me. Cause it's like, I think in part what it's doing is just calling out how totally absurd this design is. Like, yeah, it makes sense in like a game like, you know, Rising Sun, where it's about like, you know, American imperialism or whatever. But like, this is the game you're supposed to be like this person who has like a, you know, you're supposed to believe and trust in them. But instead it's like, oh, I'm just killing all these people who have names now. It was easier when they were like zombies because I could kind of like tone out the fact that I was killing real people. But like, now I am just doing this and it feels weird and it doesn't make it better.
Yeah, it's just like, and then none of like the actual main characters are like not white, like except for like there's like one, or there's like a couple people, but they don't treat them that well. Let's just say that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like Dina's Jewish, and then Jesse's Korean, I think. I think it's Korean is what he says, but yeah, there's not that. It's mostly white people are the main characters. It's
kind of impossible largely to tell with Jesse because he's like, his name is Jesse and he talks like fucking white Earp. Like he is kind of like a drawl type thing going on. I'm like, okay, like this guy's cool, I guess. I don't know, man. This stuff is, it just makes me feel. And then like all the main characters are white anyway. I don't know, man. I guess it's cool that there's not just white people in the whole game, but when they're just there to like you for you to like choke them out and like stab them in the throat and hear them gurgle. It's also like, is this really a W for us? Like, I don't know about that. Also, side thing, why does everyone in this game dress like they're in a fucking LL Bean catalog, dude? Like an Eddie Bauer catalog. Like, bro, no one in this game wears color in their outfits. I'm like,
it's also available in the post-apocalypse, dude. The only stores that didn't get raided were LL Bean.
Or Eddie Bauer. Fucking
yeah, it'll be still operational. They got Square face up in there.
It's like REI is the only store that's open, so everyone just goes to REI.
I'm just like, dude, do you know?
Honestly, that would be the first place I'd raid in a post-apocalypse because REI, it has clothes, it has fucking outdoors gear, it has guns.
It's got all your shit
in some states, I think. It's got bars. So, yeah, it's like you're all bars good.
I would raid the fucking Supreme store.
It's like it's selling at a premium. What dumbass?
You don't think people would be wearing Supreme in the post-apocalypse?
You don't think the box would, logo is gonna have like, the same clout?
You don't think people would be wearing?
You could trade Supreme for like a cup of coffee or some shit.
How come they're not
it's
wearing?
It's like in the Oregon Trail when you're trading for goods, you're trading your Supreme stuff.
Where's the fucking Canada Goose? Where's the fucking?
Oh, Canada Goose would be warm as fuck. That'd be useful if you're up north. You could trade that.
Where's the Louis V? Where's the fucking? There, people would be taking
like
all
Louis
the luxury
V bag.
Shit.
That would be my backpack in the post-apocalypse. Like a Louis V duffel bag just strapped across my back.
It feels for a game, and this is what I'm calling right now. Apologies to anyone who loves Tacoma. But it's like, I'm calling it like Tacoma syndrome, where it's like, it's diverse, but sometimes feels cultureless.
Right. It's like one culture grafted onto other races.
Yeah. It's like it. And that's like a very weird thing to say, because I can't prescribe what like culture looks like in effect. You know what I'm saying? And it feels weird to say like, an Asian character should act like this. So I understand what like the base, like if you're going to try to refute what I'm saying argument is, I understand that point of view as well. And I don't want to do that. However, it does feel like one culture is being just grafted onto like Asian people or like onto other people who don't share like the person who wrote them's like, you know, way of being or whatever. And a lot of that to me kind of comes through in the way that clothing works in this game. A lot of it also comes through in some of the writing, like why do you have the Hispanic Latino dude speaking fucking like in Spanglish like that? Like,
Yeah, what? So many, sorry, side note, so many games and movies like do that, and I've never understood it because, like, I grew up in California and no one fucking does that. No one does that. Like, why is this like a trend? I don't understand it.
As a Mexican, I don't randomly insert Spanish phrases into the, and then they have one of the characters like try to be buddy buddy with one, like one of the white characters is speaking to like this character that I'm speaking about. His name's Manny, not a spoiler, there's a character named Manny in the game, and she's the person who's talking to him is like, yeah, cabron, she says cabron, dude. I'm like, really? She speaks Spanglish to try to be cool with this dude. It's like, and she's just terrible pronunciation, like a, bro. Cabron.
It's like how like, it's like Paul Walker in the old Fast and Furious movies, like talking to people in Miami. He's like, I'm a white guy, but like, I've got your lingo down.
I know how to curse in Spanish.
Friendo. Friende.
Amigo.
Yeah, exactly.
Hermano.
It's very much like 90s or early 2000s drug movie where like the kingpin is a white person. He's got to like go to Miami. He's like, I've got the deal for you, hermano.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
Drop the My Anime list, Manny. Drop that My Anime list, bro. That's all I'm trying to say. That's the basic big stuff that I had to say about The Last of Us.
How far are you?
I don't fucking know, man. I guess I'm like...
He told me, and he's like a little... He's like around halfway-ish, but like a little under halfway. And that upset Josh.
Like I've been playing this game forever.
Bro, so my partner, he got... He's like in like day two-ish of Seattle. And he asked, am I halfway done? And I had to break the news that he is nowhere near halfway done, and it like broke his heart. I felt so bad.
It's because so
he's like, he's not a gamer. He still has like 30 hours to soak into a game. It's like, it's this game is unnecessarily so long. It did not need to be this long. Like, I think it would have been way more effective if it was like half the length. And yet it is so long. So long.
I'm rearing up here, folks.
Yeah. Just gotta take a better come out.
I know, and I know I feel like that was like a take recently people were getting mad at about like playing about games being too long, but it's true. Games are too long.
Okay. Why? This game has become like a flashpoint for argument about criticism and stuff like that. Lot of critics have been like rated for saying bad shit about this game, right? Like just... If you like, there's something wrong with you. It has like a 94 on Metacritic or something like that. And like Naughty Dog themselves have been tweeting like, fuck you, man. We put work into this game. Like, why would you ever say something negative about it? Blah, blah, blah. I don't understand how it can be interpreted that The Last of Us 2 should be immune to criticism. Do you know how many hours of this game are literally spent walking around, mashing triangle, hoping that you pick up the shit around you? Like most, ammo, I would say a large portion of this game. Like I've probably spent a pure 3 hours of gameplay, at least. That's being generous. Merely walking around, mashing triangle, trying to get loot. And that's like, that is not even an exaggeration. Like if you took the amount of time that I spent in this game walking around environments that are just completely devoid of people, mashing triangle, trying to find shit, AKA alcohol, rags, tape, blades, bottles to craft things like bandages,
additional lung capacity,
silencers. No, for additional lung capacity, you have to collect.
That's like
pills.
The gear thing.
You collect
pills. Yeah, pills. Pills for all the health upgrades. It's the gear stuff for the guns.
They call them quote supplements. But what's funny is it reminds me of like the
pills.
It reminds me of the Tim Rogers critique of BioShock, where he talks about like how you go to like a trash can and you pick up, you eat some candy bars, and then like after that you like upgrade your powers at a vending machine, and how like we don't even think and then people call that game a masterpiece. Like, we don't even think about like the absurdity of this shit, but there's a scene, there's this one like you have to unlock a locker in The Last of Us 2, and it's like there's a note, like there's lore where it's like, hey, left you some like painkillers in the safe for your back, because I know you've been having like a lot of back pain recently, blah blah blah. And then you open the safe and there's pills in there, but you take it to like, you take it to upgrade your like listening capability so you can like hear enemies better, or like your weapon, decrease your weapon sway, or like it, like improve the amount that your health packs heal. It's like, come on, dude, are we really? That's what I'm saying, man. It's like, this is a game. This has a lot of gamey moments that don't feel like masterpiece-y type shit, where you're literally walking around mashing triangle, trying to find the codes to a safe that has pills in it that upgrade your listening ability. And like, how can you say it's censorship or like disrespectful to not think that stuff is good? You know? If that makes me some kind of curmudgeon, then fucking so be it. But I don't think it's bad to say that that's not particularly compelling stuff.
What really sucks about all this that's been coming up about is like, while this is going on, Naughty Dog has been obviously getting like widespread, massive harassment and death threats, especially towards a certain voice actress on the cast and everything. Like, because they're not happy with like the direction the story goes. So it's like they've been dealing with like widespread or like really toxic like fans. They're not really fans if they're like just literally sending death threats to people making games, the games they supposedly love or whatever. So it's like I feel like they're conflating just like any hint or any like touch of criticism, be it joking or not joking, or be it like legit criticism as was seen at some of the reviews at launch and like unscored reviews, or be it like just on Twitter through people just kind of talking their way through the game. And they're kind of conflating all of that into one big thing of like any criticism is bad, which is unfortunate because, I mean, there's a lot of good criticism and a lot of good conversation that is going on about this game. And it's being drowned out by the fact that you can't say anything bad about this game right now because of all the toxic people that are saying actual nasty, like unwarranted bad shit about this game. And it sucks. It's just like a shitty like situation, like all around, really.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The other thing too, though, is that like, I think like part of that is like unfortunate, but also like, fuck Naughty Dog. This is like the biggest selling game of 2020 or something stupid. It's like,
it's already sold. It's already sold. You're the winner. Shut up. An obscene amount. Yeah. It's like, and the majority of people don't care about what.
To be sure.
Yeah,
like threats like, against the people in the game is like fucking stupid. And if you're one of those people, fuck you. That's really bad.
Yeah.
But like these people have made so much money off of this game. And it's like, you're the sorest winners. Like, shut up. If no one likes your game, like you've won. Like there's no, you're just punching down. And I think the other thing about it too, though, about these people who are like getting mad at this game is that I feel like this is like a thing I think we see in like AAA stuff especially, is like there's just a total denial of culpability by Naughty Dog, that the idea of how they are making this game and how they promote it is actually stewing audiences to have these sorts of reactions. Like they're targeting this game to an audience who they know harasses these types of people and like is not conducive to hearing about these types of stories, and they're like, it's almost like they're subjecting themselves to this criticism knowing that it's going to happen, and then like somehow like crafting it to be their sort of stone they're going to die on. And it's like, if you're going to like just doing this whole like giant AAA model, doing these huge games and like promoting them in this certain way, is how you talk to like core gamer people who are clearly not the audience that you're trying to go for this story. And you're inflicting this harm yourself, and you keep doing this and you're not thinking about it. And Naughty Dog's just like, our game's fine. We did everything right. It's like the mean people out there. And it's like, you fucking stoked the flames with how you've been promoting this game for the past whenever. Like, this whole cycle of how AAA games especially come out is why you have people have these like crazy insane reactions to stuff, because they're like grooming audiences to sort of want to have these outsized reactions. And when they don't inevitably meet these promises, like people get pissed. So it like reduces like you know, trust not only in developers, but it also makes players seem like silly and reduces their own like willing to buy. And it's like the whole model of this production is like poisoning the well for everyone. And I think it's like you see other stuff that's like massively successful, like that's been digitally distributed, that like doesn't have these same problems. In part, I think because they like don't try to like go for this audience in the same way. So I'm just like, harassment is bad, but also fuck you, Naughty Dog. You're completely like flush right now with capital. And also like you're doing shit that makes this happen in the first place. And I'm not talking about the sort of story that you put inside your game. It's like the whole, like this whole structure of AAA production is just, it just like, it almost anticipates this, like it knows it's going to come. And then they kind of like spin it and be like, well, our game is perfect, but those gamers, you know, they just, oh, so bad. It's like, you gotta wake up. This is not like, you're messing up if this is happening every time you release a video game.
It's endemic to the whole industry. Like just this, like how, and it's also a vocal minority, like plain and simple, like just judging from the sales numbers and like anecdotally just like seeing both like friends I talk to on a regular basis and people I don't really talk to just like posting about this game, like normal people, not people in the industry, like people I'm just friends with on Instagram, which is just like people I've known from like my hometown and that I know here in the city. And like largely people really like this game. Like they're into the story. They're into the characters. Like some are like mixed on it, which I've had some like it's fun talking about games with people that don't really talk about games. Cause like a whole different vocabulary I kind of have to like adopt.
Yeah.
And it's like really been interesting to like talk to my friends about this game, because I usually don't get to talk about video games besides like Call of Duty with them. So that's been like an interesting thing. But yeah, it's really just a vocal minority, and it's like just the vocal minority that spends all their time on the internet. They don't go outside that often. I mean, especially now with the quarantine and everything. But like, it's, I don't know. It's a thing that there's no easy answer to. It's like I don't know if AAA studios are fully culpable for it, but I do think there needs to be more done to like try not give a voice to these toxic voices like, in all these gaming communities.
I just think about stuff like, I mean, even inside of Sony's wheelhouse, right? Like this shit doesn't happen with Dreams. Like the Dreams That's community true. Is amazing. All those people there are great. Dreams has a fuck huge budget from Sony. Like it's like just as inflated in some ways as like Uncharted as like Naughty Dog, but it's like clearly the way like Naughty Dog's production is geared towards a sort of core gamer audience is like shooting themselves in the foot, and like everyone that's like doing the same sort of thing. And it's like, I don't know like what changes, and I'm not trying to say like rip it all up, because like I do enjoy like really amazingly crafted video games made by teams of hundreds of people. Like those are beautiful things in themselves, but like the model doesn't work for these reasons. And this shit like always happens when you sort of like, it's what's the phrase is like, you keep like trying to do the same things expecting different results. And I feel like that's just like what's happening here. Like, of course this is going to happen. Of course this person's going to get threats, because you fucking groomed your audience who's buying this game for the past 2 years to like just be ready to, you know, not like this thing. I don't want to get into spoilers here, but it's like there's shit in this game that is going to make those people mad. And it's not like fun in a way that's like a twist. It's like fun in a way that they're going to take to Twitter and send people death threats. I'm pissed.
I mean, for the record, like Naughty Dog did not create the core gamer audience.
No.
But
they're tapping into it, right? Like this, that's the whole thing.
I mean, I think they're tapping into that, like the subset of gamers that cares a lot about what other people think about video games as an art form, because they need that legitimacy of like, look at this game, it's art. And it's like, that's what they ostensibly thought that they might be getting with The Last of Us 2. And I think like that's probably what Naughty Dog was aiming for.
Because you want to play The Last of Us 2. Like you buy a PS4 literally in the winter because you're like, I love Last of Us 1. Like I'm so excited. Like this is why you buy this fucking $400 black box.
But they also probably didn't realize that like, most of the people who still care that video games aren't taken seriously enough are like, you know, the city kid who like just found out about like conservatives and like just discovered Joe Rogan and is like, holy shit, dude. Like people make, you know, make their own decisions, and like capitalism's the best, dude. It's, name a system that's worked better than that. Also, video games are an art form. If you don't believe that, you're a piece of shit. Oh my God, The Last of Us is going to show everyone what a video game's all about. And then they're like, lesbians? What the fuck?
Lesbians can't be art, man. It's just, bro, it's a rule.
Jordan Peterson would not approve. Ben Shapiro would hate this. Wait, Mr. Shapiro wouldn't approove of this game. I thought it was supposed
Has Shapiro sounded off yet on Last of Us 2 takes? Dude.
The lesbians have invaded gaming and they're making video games now where you could press a button and you're gonna kiss another girl. Can you believe that shit? You're gonna
press a button and pick up bottles on the floor. Can you believe it?
That was a terrible Ben Shapiro voice, but
you did a good job.
What you get the idea?
You're generally bad at accents, if I remember.
I'm generally
I'm bad at accents. Yeah. Remember my Katie's Sonic voice?
By far the worst.
Oh my God, I am the
Katie's
worst.
Definitely the worst. I'm not saying I'm the worst. Good at it. To be
it
clear.
Depends on that. It depends on the accent, but I think I'm usually okay. But also, I can be very bad. The Jordan P. I'll be the first to tell you that Jordan that or. Fucking Ben Shapiro was bad. That was a bad one. All right, like
not
I'm
in
willing
the highlight
to offer
reel.
That up. But
thanks, Josh.
Anyway, guys, that's The Last of Us 2. We ended up talking about.
I'm
this
glad we only talked about The Last of Us 2 for 40 minutes.
Yeah, like 50 minutes.
But it ended up being a whole other thing, and not like we have many other games to talk about anyway. Katie played World Warzone. It's like,
just playing Warzone, really. Like ever since I wrapped Last of Us 2, I was like relieved to get back into Call of Duty. I think because it was such an exhausting experience. I was like, oh, okay, I'm ready to just like mindlessly shoot things and level up my crossbow. You know, it's like just doing bullshit, leveling up a shotgun right now. That's where I'm at in Call of Duty.
I was wrecking shit yesterday with the FAL.
Hell yeah.
They buffed the FAL.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty good.
It's like at close range, you like three shot people with that shit. It's insane. It's
bro. I've been using the 725 shotgun lately. That shit. Oh God. It's like one shot. All you need. Just
I don't
boom boom
use
boom.
Shotguns in that game.
You gotta be close though. You gotta be real close.
Yeah, but Warzone. Otherwise I use the Grau or the Ram, and then the Car 98. Very fun.
Dude, the car is.
The car rules.
Oh
dude.
My God.
The car fucking whips.
I've been leveling it up. And that thing owns, man. Yesterday, I was like, I had some screamers, dude. I downed two people in a moving car with the Car 98.
Whoa.
Fuck yeah.
It was nuts.
Fucking gamer hours.
Oh, I was
Damn.
Gaming. I was gaming.
Sweating.
Didn't get a W because I feel like the lobbies are getting a lot harder now.
Oh yeah, for sure. I feel
they probably rank you based off the level of your guns.
No, it's not ranked. It's not ranked.
Yeah, it's.
I bet there's a little bit of rank in there.
No, I think it's mostly that. Like, I think people have just been getting way better at this game because everyone's stuck indoors. So now, like, I feel like there's a bigger pool of people that are getting really good at Warzone. So yeah, it's like I feel like encounters have definitely, and they've been like. Messing with the balancing of weapons, like the Grau has like a weird recoil now, which is fucking annoying because it was like my favorite gun, and now but it was everyone's favorite gun. That was a problem.
The Grau was the Grau. Absurd.
It was
dude.
Super OP.
They had a nerf,
but it's like
gun
I didn't have a sight on it, and I would get so many long shot kills with that thing. It was insane. The bullet drop was like non-existent.
I have the 3x.
It's fucking great.
The 3x
I miss
scope
it.
On it is like it's still really good. I hear like the Kilo 141 is pretty good now. But the iron sights are the iron sights on the Grau are also really good. But I like playing with new guns in that
Call
game.
Duty's
it may it's kind of fun to be like, "Oh, I'm using a little
That's what I've been doing. I used to be big on the PKM LMG, and now I've been experimenting with like more assault rifles, SMGs. So I'm kind of like I'm mixing it up a little bit. It used to be just the car and the PKM was what I ran with all the time, but now I'm like leveling up
what?
My pistols.
Car PKM? Yeah. That's so heavy.
I don't know.
You
isn't
run
it,
so
isn't
slow.
It like, oh, yeah. No, it's fine. I don't know.
You gotta
it's,
go like
but now
car
I,
and an SMG.
Well, now that's what I do for multiplayer. I'm talking like Warzone, like, because I feel like I'm only doing like long distance battles with Warzone mostly. But in the PKM, I feel like still good for close encounters. So I just hip fire it. Like, fuck it. It's gonna kill him. It doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter.
I really wonder where, like, I wonder where battle royales go sort of after Warzone, because Warzone to me feels like, having like played like a decent amount of it, was like my go-to game when I wasn't working on my own video game for the past like 2 months. Like, it's what I played at night. And I was like, this just does all the stuff right. Like, this is like, I think the sort of vision set out by PUBG, like Warzone is just, it's just, it is the best version of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, what's next? Not because I care and like want that right now, because I do still really enjoy what Warzone is doing. It's like really fun to play, but like, I don't know what like the big thing would be for a battle royale next, like,
yeah,
or like,
I don't know.
I guess maybe like environmental stuff, kind of like what Apex is like doing or trying to do, but I don't know. Like, I don't really know where it goes from here.
I mean, Fortnite's gonna be big excited forever. Like, that's just there. But I feel like I considered Fortnite more of like a social platform at this point than a battle royale. You know, like, I think that all the interesting stuff it does is like stuff it's doing not with the battle royale itself, but like weird, like,
yeah,
the movie
like
night thing.
3D, shared 3D multiplayer space.
Yeah, exactly. It's more of a social space than a battle royale to me. Ubisoft just like soft launched its battle royale thing. I can't remember the name of it. It's like Hyper,
oh, it's
something.
Like Hyper Breaker or like something.
Something,
yeah,
like
that.
Right. I'm curious about that. It's like in technical beta right now, I think, or something like that. I don't know when that's launching, but I'm really curious about that. I'll probably test that out. I actually don't know if it's free to play. I'm assuming it's free to play. I feel like it's dumb to make a battle royale that isn't free to play, maybe today. Yeah, I'm curious about that. But yeah, Warzone's like still just, it's just hitting it for me. I play it literally every night, that and multiplayer. I don't know. It's weird. I'm really into Call of Duty. That's like,
I know what the next step is. I have an idea for a battle royale game that I
pitch it.
I didn't like just have it, but it's sort of an idea that I've had for a while. But I think like one thing that the battle royale can do is actually iterate on the idea of the, what would you call it? Like the barrier, the thing that closes
the circle.
In. The circle is like the best way to describe it. But
I mean,
there,
that's
like,
what it's always a circle.
Everybody calls it the
circle.
The
circle.
Yeah. Circle. So
the
like,
storm,
I think
the gas,
iterating,
the whatever.
Iterating on the idea of the circle, I think, is next. And the idea that I had for a game I want to make that's like nowhere near the scale of these huge games is that actually sort of like incorporating player death as part of the circle itself. So like, I have this idea for this game I wanted to do, which I won't say like the theme of, but basically like, when players die, instead of just despawning, they can basically become part of the circle and sort of like hunt stuff that's like within some distance from the circle. So basically like imagine there was a battle royale that like took place underwater and like you're a scuba diver. And if you like died because of whatever fuck reason, like you could turn into a shark and basically swim around the perimeter of the, of like the circle, and then like some distance in front of it, you can basically attack players at the circle. So what it means, it kind of keeps forcing players in, and also like it's free reign inside the circle. So I think you sort of make the circle itself a little weaker, but it makes some, which makes like being inside the circle strategy more viable, but you're sort of like potentially able to be attacked by other players who've like spawned in as like kind of like antagonistic creatures. There's like some game that like did this in more of like an arena setting. I guess it's kind of like the premise of like zombie games, right? Is that like one player becomes a zombie and then all the players attack or whatever. But I think like that could be potentially next. That's like a very different game than what these games are doing right now. But like you can sort of use the same framework. But because like the map gets smaller, there's all this other map that's not being done with for the rest of the game. And so if you actually make that like a potentially interesting space to be in, kind of like besides the like 2 minute sit you can maybe do in there until you die, like there's something with that. I think that I don't know if anyone's gonna do that. That's what I want to do, but we'll see.
They are like experimenting with different game modes in this, where there's like, they have like plunder where you have to like collect a lot of money, they have the juggernaut thing where like you get the juggernaut outfit, and I one of the first, not first pieces, but like one of, I think, my coolest pieces that I ever did about like esports was like a piece about the geography and like history of the MOBA map, and how like a lot of the original people who were thinking about like creating a MOBA map, like why is it three lanes? Why is it like this? It's because you're trying to encourage two things with the map, which is like one of them is you're trying to encourage players to interact with each other. But in order to do that, you have like neutral objectives on the map that they can kind of fight over. And so they have like incentive to be in certain places to make their characters better, which is like the minions, the jungle, the towers that give them money if you take them down. In Call of Duty, that's like the floor loot, the contracts, get the players moving, the buy stations where players have to congregate if they want to like buy stuff, which is a major part of the game. So like manipulating those types of things would encourage more fighting. Like the whole thing, like the whole reason why the circle exists is so that like people fight, right? And and it's also a very controlled way of doing that. But like, what if the objective was like to be the first team to reach $80,000 or whatever, or be the last team standing, and like the circle like closes in during the game, except like you don't die if you stay outside of the circle, like the money just goes away or something like that. Like there's just like,
yeah, like it like evaporates chests or something.
Yeah, or like buy stations go away. So like if you want to win, you like theoretically have to get in closer. Like it's just little ways of manipulating like where the objectives are, where the players are encouraged to be, and like where fights happen and stuff like that, which is all really cool stuff. And it totally switches the strategy. Even if you were to change something like that, if the circle didn't kill you, it just got rid of buy stations or something, that would change the game altogether. But yeah, these are just things that I think could be experimented with in the future. You guys want to get into questions?
Yeah.
I'll say one thing. Yeah. I've been playing Mario Odyssey, and that game is still so underrated. It's just like,
let's check the Metacritic score on that one.
I mean, I guess I say underrated. I feel like it's not talked about enough is more what I'm getting at. It's
This is such an amazing game
that like came out, and I think it was just completely overshadowed by how also incredible Breath of the Wild was. But it's like, we forget that like the best 3D Mario since like Mario 64 came out, and we don't talk about that. This is very
Super
it's very
Mario Galaxy is the best 3D Mario.
No. I'll give you no.
Yes,
Galaxy
yes,
2
yes, yes.
is better than Galaxy 1.
Oh,
I think
yeah, I mean,
Odyssey
yeah, I mean, but
better.
It's I kind of like consider them like as one package almost, but like both those games are way better than Odyssey.
No.
Odyssey's just ugly. It's so fucking like it's like a hodgepodge of art styles.
The hodgepodge of aesthetics is like definitely weird. It's like there's a computer next to like a turtle, next to like a realistic bird.
It looks awful.
Bird.
I feel like there's no focus with that game. And I just don't. And I don't think it was like fine to play. I feel like this way about most 3D Marios, where I just feel like no attachment to keep playing that. Like there's no like hook for me like there was with Galaxy. The Galaxy games are just like a cut above the rest in like such a big way for me, like they're just
fun,
so magical and fun, and just
that's the thing,
they
is
feel
like
fresh like Mario always
like,
did
it's
whereas
just
I feel,
joyful
yeah
it's just like it's just joyful to exist in like 3D Mario games
yeah.
in a way that like no game nails that in the same way.
But I would like, say like the other all. 3D Mario games besides the Galaxy games don't do that for me. They're just like mostly like they're either one boring like the like new Super Mario Bros. U was that the 3D one or New Super
with
Mario
the
Peach, World
with the like cat costume?
Yeah, it's like those yeah.
New Super Mario Bros. U. Just for the Wii U.
Well, there's like a 2D scroll, 3D side scrolling one, but then there's like an actual like 3D space one.
And New Super Mario Bros. Was like the Wii one that was like the big
yeah.
remake.
Super Mario
kind of based
3D
on the
World.
DS version.
Super Mario 3D
World.
3D World
is what
yeah,
I think about. Yeah,
that's
I hated
one,
that
yeah.
game. Ugh, hated that one too. It's just like, I don't
but
know.
Like
I don't.
Not great.
There's just something like so like uninspired, I feel like, about a lot of 3D Mario games. Like it just feels almost like Nintendo's kind of going through the motions with them. Whereas like with Galaxy, it felt like they were just
killing
it went with something
me.
Really bold.
I think like the best thing about Odyssey specifically is just that like it's just the way that like everything is sort of imbued with this like just crazy to style and love in a way that, like, I think especially because the mechanics of the game itself really lends itself to this sort of like explorative play. It's, I mean, it's a lot like Breath of the Wild, I think. Like the whole like kind of way moons work is a lot like Korok seeds, which are like one of my favorite parts of Breath of the Wild, where it's just like, it just incentivizes you playing around. So like you open up this level and it's like, oh, you need 10 moons. And it's like, cool, sounds good. What if I get 30 instead? Because it's just fun to like run around and try stuff. And like, just like, I think for me specifically, like incentivizing that sort of play, like I still do love like the structured stuff of like what Galaxy and Galaxy 2 do. And I mean like Mario 64 and stuff like that. But I think specifically what, just the way that Odyssey makes the game about the idea of playing around with like loosely structured goals just feels like, it just feels so fresh when you play it. You're like, oh, I can sort of like go explore over here and like go do some of this stuff. And like, oh, how do I get over there? And like, you're sort of driven by your own curiosity versus being like, level two, do this star or something. And I just really, 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 really enjoy that. And Nintendo's fucking good at making video games. Like their shit just doesn't feel like anything else. Like nothing feels as like good as like this Mario. Like we're talking about like floaty PlayStation platformers. Like, man, it just feels good to play Odyssey too. Like the character controller is just delicious.
I like Odyssey.
That's all I have to say.
I like Odyssey too. Questions.
We're going to do some questions from the Discord because it's been a minute and we asked for them and the people responded. Also, shout out to some of the new people who've joined the Discord. We'd love to see you. It's also not the end of the podcast yet, but I do want to say, because we're right here and I'm talking now, is that if you have any issues on the Discord, please reach out to one of the three of us. That could be about conversation. It could be about where do I talk? It could be about what do these channels mean? I think it's sort of like, it can be intimidating. And actually, if you are a new person, I don't mean to call out like the few new people who joined, but like if you've joined in the past 2 or 3 months and you're like, the Discord's cool, but I don't know how to say anything because it seems kind of busy, then like, let us know. I think because I've especially had sort of thoughts about like ways we can sort of make the onboarding experience into our Discord a little nicer, so you don't just plop you in with like 15 channels that are all like talking about different stuff all the time. So if you've had that feedback or have feedback on the Discord in general, definitely reach out because we'd love to hear it. On to questions.
And if you want to become part of the Discord, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/badend.
/badend/real_badend.
No, that's not it. Okay. What's your favorite low energy type game? Puzzle games to relax, low key walking game, et cetera, et cetera.
Mario Odyssey.
It's pretty low key.
It's just fun. You just pop it open. You just run around. It's like, maybe I'll get a moon or two. Like, it's just not driven in a way that's like really nice.
Pit Cross.
Oh, that's a vibey game for sure.
Katie, you got one?
I feel like Wilmot's Warehouse was kind of that game for me for a while. It's like a calming organization game, especially when I was traveling. Like, cause I get really anxious when I travel. So like on the plane, like when I went to Vegas and God, February before the world exploded, I played a lot of Wilmot's Warehouse on that trip. Because just like a nice, chill, winding down sort of game.
Wilmot.
There's like a weird, at the same time I was playing Wilmot's Warehouse, I had watched The Cook, The Wife, The Thief.
And Their Lover.
I don't remember exactly. And Their Lover. And there's like a very big part of that movie is the sort of, well, his lover, yes. A very big part of that movie is the warehouse sort of behind the kitchen. So I have this weird, like, Wilmot's Warehouse is somehow in my like brain, like, mapped to this, like, it's like, because it feels like approximately the same size. There's also, like, the movie starts with this, like, kind of crazy scene where this truck backs up to the warehouse and, like, unloads shit. And so, like, in my mind, like, this is like a weird 2D vector version of like that warehouse from that movie. And it feels like it sort of has the same geography and like you're delivering food to people on the other end of it. So I'm like, oh, well, this is obviously
Absolution.
Exactly.
Dude, that fucking movie is.
Listen, you come to Bad End for the nuts. Fucking video games, but you get the Deep Pool film references.
The Cook, the Thief, his wife, and her lover. That's it.
Her lover.
Spoiler alert. Just kidding. That's the title.
Also, one other thing on this question too is I actually had this reaction yesterday when I saw a trailer for, oh fuck, it's this like new sort of like survival game in the vein of like The Long Dark on Epic Store. Katie, do you know what this is? Did you know about this?
No. What is it?
It's like The Night.
The Long Dark what? Am I right?
It's like The Long Dark, but like indie purple. It's like got all these, it's like feels like Hyperlight Drifter colors, but
I feel like I know what you're talking about too, which is frustrating, and I just cannot. I'm like, yeah. I know of this. And yet no name is popping up. My
basically, like I had this sort of realization that like in this game you sort of are running around the forest and like collecting stuff and then like building your house and whatever. And I had this like realization for me that games that sort of portray like casual, like games that purport to be about having a calm experience are necessarily calming to me. It's like, I don't like chill out by like trying to do this like goal directed thing in this game. Whereas like, I think Animal Crossing is sort of this weird middle ground where it is like very goal driven in a way that feels like calming to play. But the sort of like free form sandbox thing that's sort of like presenting as like a very calming game. To me, I'm just like, that feels stressful. Because it's like, you have to be calm right now when you play this game. It's sort of like coercive. It's like, this game is about not, it's about being chill. So are you chill right now? Because if you're not, you're like messing up. So I was like, oh, I don't really want to play this because like I'm worried I'm not going to be chill enough to like play this chill survival game.
Oh, man. Balls was that.
Balls.
Balls was real. Unwindy.
Grindstone was that for me for like a minute.
Yeah.
For a few months. Grindstone was like, they've added some updates, but I'm like, do I want to resub to Apple Arcade? Probably not.
Oh man, that's a whole other discussion. What's going on with that right now?
Oh yeah,
they just
canceled
all of their like premium. Yep.
It's
well, not all of them, but yeah.
Pretty dark. I don't think they announced what was being, but yeah, all their contracts. Poof. It's a bummer, but Grindstone is great.
Next question. I want some summer themed stuff. It's summer fun time. Summertime fun time. I can't believe it's summer. Anyway, did you all ever play over summer vacation and have fond memories? I used to stay up till midnight playing games and then sleep for 12 hours. I also tried Final Fantasy XI and bailed, not even my unlimited summer vacation time was enough to make a dent in that game. I have a summer gaming story that is like the only summer gaming story that ever comes to mind when I think about playing video games during the summer. And that's one summer when I was about to go back to college, but all my friends had already gone back. So I was just like at home for like 2 weeks while all my friends were gone. And it was just me at home being bored while like my family was even like going back to, you know, working and going back to school and stuff. I played Tales of Vesperia, and that was like, it was like 100 hours that I put in that game in the course of like a week. And I just remember playing the video game like from when I woke up to when I went to sleep. And I think it's like the most depressed I've ever been playing a video game. Like I remember like I would play from when I woke up and like feeling the sun go down like as you're playing a game is fucking depressing, dude. And you're like, oh my God, it's already dark outside. Like this is not.
What am I doing?
What is my life, man? Like what the fuck is this? And God, just felt bad. Felt real bad. Maybe like going to my buddy's house, like as when we were kids and like my white friend whose mom was like okay with him having GTA 3 and like we'd play GTA 3 at his house. not necessarily because he's white, but maybe, you know,
Did you just say you have white friends, Josh? Is that,
friends.
Some white friends growing up. Duh.
I'm friends with white people. Kyle,
my summer memory, whoever asked this question, the biggest gaming summer memory I had is playing Oblivion in a similar way that Josh was talking about. I definitely remember there was a stretch of like a week where all I would do was like wake up and play like 8 to 9 hours of Oblivion and then just like go to sleep and do it again. And I can feel myself in that moment and like I think I had to like mow the lawn or something, but it's just like nothing else is going on. Just kind of run around in Cyrodiil and I don't know. It's just vibe. That's like a summer game too. Just the whole vibe of that mm-hmm. like environment is beautiful. It's like summery, sunny
Oblivion?
Outside.
Oblivion? What?
Yeah. It like kind of just come out.
I wouldn't say the like vibe 2000... of Oblivion is summery.
Yeah, man. Have you looked at what Oblivion looks like recently?
I mean,
like it's like sunny, green, gray. I mean, obviously, like inside of the plane of Oblivion, like yes, it's hellish. But the actual like, it's just like nice, like compared to like Skyrim, which is like you know Arctic North
very
or Morrowind,
winter,
just
yeah.
sort of like
Morrowind's very fall,
dusty, yeah, dusty fall stuff. Oblivion is like it's summer outside and it's like green.
Sure.
Actually, I was trying to find this recently. I can't find for the fucking life of me. There was this old Flash animation called The Decline of Video Gaming. And did you guys ever watch this? Mm-mm. You guys into Flash at all? So there was like this sort of famous Flash series called The Decline of Video Gaming. And I think it was like The Decline of Video Gaming 2 or 3. This is like some like edgy, like fucking middle school, high school shit. Like you watch this now and you're like, I used to be a child. But I remember like the intro for the Decline of Video Gaming 2 or something. There's these like two guys that are sitting in front of a TV playing Smash Brothers. And it's like, man, it's such a nice day outside. We should probably go outside and play. And then it like cuts to them sitting outside in front of a CRT and you just hear melee. And I was like, yeah, that's, I'd play Oblivion outside. Go play games outside.
My choice is also an RPG. It was Persona 3 Fez. I think it came out like spring, but I had heard about it through like just the internet, like people, because I had played Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne years earlier, and I love that game. That game's fucking hard too. And I got really into Persona 3 Fez. Yeah, that was my introduction into the Persona series. I always say that like everyone's first Persona game is their favorite. Like that's why everyone's favorite is 4, even though it's the worst one, because it was everyone's first Persona game. Like everyone got in with 4 or Golden.
I feel like I've heard similar things. Well, not to that, but I feel like I've heard people who love 4 or whatever who actually play 3 are like, oh, 3 is better.
3 is
like the
so
consensus
much.
Amongst what I've heard is that 3 is the best.
3 is like so good. It's like this, just the story is really good. The cast is really good. It's like the one with the best social links. So like all the side stories are all really heavy and really good. It's just the best Persona game. I really want them to remake Persona 3, but in like with all the gameplay improvements from 5, because 5 has a lot of gameplay improvements. Like dungeons are more interesting. It's just like a better playing game overall. So, man, that would be my dream game if they, like, remade Persona 3, but, like, with all the Persona 5 stylings, I'd be fucking there day one. Because that's, yeah. Anyway.
Day one, baby.
Day one, baby. But, yeah, I've said, like, many times.
GameStop. Pick that
shit up. I love Persona 3. Persona 3 Fez is, like, my favorite game, probably. Like, it's just, I have a lot of warm memories of that game. I remember, like, being, like, almost secretive about it. Like, I remember when I was, like, dating Yukari, and there's, like, a scene that insinuates that they sleep together, but not quite. It doesn't quite go there. But I remember being like, I hope my mom doesn't walk in, you know? like that sort of thing. You know, there's like nothing bad that happens in that game, but it's like, oh my god, they might kiss. Like it's just like I felt so like embarrassed about it. It is an M for mature game, but it's still like, I think it is. Because there's dark shit in that game. But yeah, it was definitely like a moment of like, oh my god, I hope my mom doesn't walk in. Like Yukari's in my bedroom like, right now.
They like shoot themselves in the head to like
summon
their persona, right?
Yeah, it's so dark. It's such a dark game.
It's a fucking edgelord shit. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, this is even like when I was
brutal.
Like in high school, I was like, this is corny.
it's good in the game, but like in retrospect, I'm like, wow, if they made this today, it would it would not go over well. But it's a great game. It's a great game. And it was a great summer playing it.
Quick note. The game I was talking about earlier, the survival one, is called Among Trees.
That's it. Yeah.
Josh, what you got next on the list?
Okay. What's your favorite handheld / handheld gaming experience, and why is it Boktai, the sun is in your hand? You guys ever play this?
Incredible. Fuck yeah, I played Boktai. Are you kidding me?
I feel like video games, DAE, born in the wrong era, because remember this shit? Like, you had to fucking go in the sun to play the game, right? And then
I think there was also something you could sort of like hack it with a flashlight, but yeah, because it was like IR. Yeah,
but I mean, it's still. And then they had Kirby's Tilt and Tumble, which was like motion controls. Dude,
that game rips.
Yeah,
that game is still really good.
They had the freaking Game Boy printer and the Game Boy camera, and fucking Seaman, that fucking Dreamcast game, and man. Remember that stuff?
I mentioned this on the Discord recently, but I was like, can you imagine reviewing games like 15 years ago? Like, we shit on games a lot now, but I think we like love video games. But like, the bar for quality now is much higher than
It's almost like hard. Like, I mean, honestly, like, I think people see production value as just quality, which is a big problem in games criticism today. But man, games used to really fucking suck.
They used to be bad. Like, you just really look at some stuff and it's like, which like generic first person shooter do you want to play from Midway this week? And you're like, oh fuck, I don't know, one of these six. And then like this sort of like masochism of like games journalists is like, well, I have to beat it to write a good review about Max Payne 7.
Army Men.
It's like, I don't know.
Army Men, like, or the Small Soldiers movie, like, adaptation tie-in.
Or someone posted recently the like Razor Scooter game for PlayStation. It's like someone probably played that and
BMX Triple
and,
X.
Like,
that was a
game.
Yeah.
Triple X was a game. BMX XXX.
Yeah.
I imagine like today's game critics like talking about, except they lived in that era. Like, imagine like what would Austin Walker be talking about? Like, what would Yusuf Cole be talking about? What would fucking, like, what would any of us be talking about? What would Nick Capizzoli be saying about these games? RIP.
It's just like, shout out to the people who like kind of held the dream back then and were like, games are art.
Dude, that's literally,
I mean,
like,
the thing is like, there have always been like critics, I guess, of today's caliber. They were just like a lot harder to find. Like, I feel like GameSpot's been pretty consistent. Like, they've always had a pretty good review staff, like, all things considered. But like, I feel like other places, they definitely like have raised the bar relatively recently, in like the past like 5-ish plus years, where gaming journalism and criticism has gotten, like, the standards are much higher than they used to be, I think, which is a good thing, in my opinion. But, yeah.
I guess, like, someone posted today on Twitter that, like, gamer girl thing going around. Did you see this?
No. I was
someone, like, there was, like, some, like, it was, like, PC Magazine or something. Some, like, person wrote this, like, op-ed in, like, the late 90s about the phrase gamer girl, like, not being a good phrase for women. And then, like, they posted also the editorial comments from the next issue where people responded to it. And there's some just like weird shit where people are like, well, you know, girls are different than boys. They just don't like games. So she's wrong. And it's like, oh God, I think, you know, we've come far. God.
I mean, I used to watch like G4. I used to watch G4 a lot. And like Booth Babes was just like a thing, like, that they would always be like, oh, we're at E3 and the Booth Babes are here, and talking to some Booth Babes, bro. Like,
real heads know about what? Booth Babes. What a weird, weird thing.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, there's still like Booth Babes at like CES, like at tech shows. Like, it's still a thing. It's just like people, it's not a thing in games anymore, luckily. Like, at E3, there were no Booth Babes when I was there last year. So it's like.
Death.
Definitely.
I'm waiting for, like, we need some like booth dudes.
Booth bros.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want some fucking bros. I want bros. Some like yes. Hot buff dudes with like a 3DS strapped to their like waist, you know?
Windjammers 2 needs like fucking what's it called? What's the Baywatch? They need like Baywatch dudes standing outside of like the Windjammers.
They should have Fabio just advertising some like visual novels.
Just real Chads just like standing outside the Windjammers booth.
Yeah.
Next question.
What are some games that are more gruesome, depressing, or, quote, not about fun than The Last of Us Part 2?
This is a good question. I have to think about this.
Spec Ops: The Line.
Yeah, Spec Ops: The Line's like real. I was thinking about that today. It's like that game's just no nonsense.
Yeah.
It's like just all sad. it's fucking like bleak.
You do atrocities.
You're doing bad shit.
Yeah, you just did an atrocity, bro.
I want to replay that game because I wonder if it's still impact. Because I remember back when I played it and I was like, "Whoa, that was heavy, man!" Like I remember like after like the white phosphorus scene, just like walking through and you're like, "Oh shit, we killed civilians," mm-hmm. and it's like, "Oh fuck, we did what?
You got 8 billion atrocity points. Does that mean you're a bad person?" But they were like,
That game was like. Go ahead.
I feel like they did more to question that than The Last of Us potentially does. Like, where it was like, I mean, it was a little bit more reveling in it. Yeah, sure. But The Last of Us does that too, man. There's a lot of stuff, moments where you're just like, they're really trying to make you feel bad about the shit that you're doing.
Press square to torture. You know, it's like, but also I will say, I feel like when I'm like, I don't know, like maybe I'm just. I'm trying to think of the word for it. Like maybe I'm just like numb. Numb feels like the wrong word, but
desensitized.
Like violence, desensitized. Maybe I'm desensitized, but like nothing in The Last of Us Part 2 like shocked me considerably, really. Besides like a scene that happens toward the start.
This is what I was gonna.
Maybe
say.
That's like weird. Yeah, like I don't think anything in The Last of Us Part 2 is like particularly more. Brutal than like any other game. Like yeah, sure, like it really like when you like choke someone out or like stab someone in the throat, it's like gross, you know, it's like that's like not pleasant, but like I don't know, like I think about like the torture scene in Grand Theft Auto 5 a lot. Like I think that's like a scene that like really stuck with me, and for like a bad reason. Like I don't think that's a good sequence of violence, and it's like very much like reveling in it, like Josh said before. Like it's a gross scene. Like you torture someone. Like it's not great. And I feel like I think about that scene more of like, oh, I don't like that the game made me do that, but I feel like GTA 5 makes you do a lot of things that are like not great. But it's not particularly mature about those subjects, like in the way it is with Red Dead Redemption 2 per se. But yeah. Whereas like with Last of Us Part 2, I just felt like, yeah, like it says shit. It's gross sometimes. Like it doesn't hold back from showing you the ugly side of violence, but I wouldn't say it was like particularly worse than other games, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways it is, but they're kind of discounting the idea that like once you reach a certain point of like disconnect in your brain, like I have this mode where I'm like in video game violence mode where I'm like, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm just like playing a video game, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not thinking, it doesn't register in my brain as violence. But then when you like kill someone and they're just like screaming, it's like, oh, it's like, you're just like, come on, bro. Just fucking, did you really have to do just that? Die, it's like, man. That's gross, bro. Like, why are you gurgling?
Yeah, when they like choke on their blood, it's like, okay, come on.
And you like, if you shoot someone, their arm gets blown off and they're just sitting on the floor like, oh, God, for like.
Do you have to like walk over and like finish them on the head or something?
I mean, you can, yeah. Like, but they'll be screaming there for like 10 seconds. And then, you know, they come and they're like, oh, God, they just killed Charlotte. Oh, God. And they're like, who could do such a thing? Blah, blah, blah. And you're supposed to feel bad, but you're just like, oh, shit, I have to kill.
Yeah, it was fucking me.
It's like,
and
oh, shit,
I have
to kill them, too. And then, oh, God. Oh, another funny thing that happens in The Last of Us a lot is like during one of the sequences, you're like hot on the trail of this person who you're pursuing. Right. And then. You'll come across these grisly scenes where like people have been killed and stuff. And then Ellie's like, I didn't know he was capable. Capable of this violence. And then in the next room, you kill like 40 people. Like you're stabbing them in the throat and shit. And
yeah. But no, that was like in, a weird jerk thing.
She's like, oh, dude, I can't believe he could be this violent. oh God. And it, like, that's the whole thing is like, they're trying to make you just suspend your disbelief in one way. And then, but they also want you to like totally buy in the same context. Like, you can't be asking me to do both at the same time, bro. Anyway.
No, sounds like, never mind.
Okay.
I was going to try to make like a dig at stupid gamers, oh. But I couldn't think of a good one.
R.I.P.
Now there's this bad audio.
I'm sure you'll come up with something at some point in the future.
I'll get one day.
Okay, we got a kind of, this question reminds me of like, you don't know Jack questions, like how those are written, you know? I'll read it.
Okay. I know.
Help. My Uncle Dingus signed up for a game show where he is locked in a room and can't leave until he beats Doom, Resident Evil 2, and Final Fantasy 7 on normal. He's played them before and thought this would be easy, but it turns out that he has to beat the remakes. I'm on the phone with him. How can I help? The poor fella hasn't played a dual analog or mouse look game in his life, but he has a library of every other video game of existence, which he can use for practice.
What?
So if you were to, I mean, the question is basically like, if you were to, how would you help someone who hasn't played a game in like 25 years and is used to like the game era of Doom, Resident Evil 2, or Final Fantasy 7 back in the day, which was like, Final Fantasy VII, very turn-based RPG, doesn't really require that much skill. It requires more strategy. Resident Evil 2, which has its challenges, but it's like basically tank controls. And then Doom, which is like, yeah, it's a first-person shooter, but it's not like the mouse looking around in the same way.
Also, Doom's hard.
Yeah, maybe Doom is like the least relevant one to this question, but...
I got it.
Yeah. Kyle.
I got it. You gotta start them. For the Doom one... Start them on Time Splitters because it's kind of nominally dual control, but the control is always stuck in the middle of the screen. So you can like you can like sort of manually aim by pressing a different button and then sort of like using that stick. Otherwise, you're moving the camera, and then you're moving forward. I guess you can strafe, but you don't actually have to aim. So that part's super nice. So you can jump and stuff, but I think like taking a variable out, whereas to say like, oh, your reticule is always basically in the same place, provided that you're like lined up in one axis with someone, versus having to sort of like do the thing that always happens when you give someone that's like never played a dual analog game. They just like instantly look at the floor and like can't figure out how to like look back up.
I have something I want to say about this, and I probably said it on this podcast a long time ago, but I feel like every generation of video game needs to come with a program that comes batched in with the console that has a simple set of tutorials of how to do like basic shit you do in video games. Like, this would make games so much more accessible. Think about how if you're trying to learn how to ride a bike right now as a 20-year-old. 20, 30 year old, whatever, just learning how to ride a bike for the first time. You're going to look at YouTube videos. You're going to look at like, you're going to try to figure out what the best way to do this is. Like, you're going to look for materials because you're not just going to want to go out there and just maybe try it. I mean, maybe you would, but you feel less compelled to do that. But if you knew there are resources out there to help you do that, you would be more likely to do it, right? There are no resources like this really for people. Like, if you're just trying to figure out how to play, it's like they should have simple tutorials, how to play a game in first person, how to like play a game in third person, like the basics of like RPG combat or whatever, that are just like really basic ways of moving around in games that like you see a lot of. And that way, like, when people worry about like how there's not that many new people into video games, like, that's one big accessibility thing, is like, there's no way to learn how to like move two sticks. Like, think about how many people's, if you talk to any normal people who don't play video games, they're like, oh yeah, it just started getting really complex when like you have to look around and stuff like that. Like, quote, looking around is one of the biggest challenges in video games for people. And it's like, I don't blame them, because that shit's hard. But there needs to be better ways of teaching people how to deal with this shit, you know?
Josh, that's a great, great idea.
Thanks. And criticism of video games as a whole. They should do that. They should do that, in my opinion.
I feel like it's also nice because it offloads some of that shit from games themselves. Like, I remember, I think in Halo 3, before you actually play, you're like on this ship, and there's this whole like sequence where it's like, look at the light at the top of your screen. Look at the light at the bottom exactly of your screen. You're talking about, yeah. Look at the light. Yeah, and so it's like a lot of games have to sort of do that because there are a lot of, especially AAA, like really big games, assume that like this might be the first game you've ever played. And like making that shit is not easy. Like that's still like content and stuff to do and it takes time. And if like, yeah, like Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo just commissioned like a game studio or themselves to like, oh, we're going to make like 5 mini games. I think this is kind of what the Wii did, right? Like this was the whole kind of premise of Wii Sports. Was like, this is how you use these weird controllers. And so everyone played that for free and then sort of learned the paradigm. So if like Sony was like, oh, we made these like series of 5 or 6 mini games you can play through for free that are like not really full games, but sort of teach you how to do this stuff. Like, that's a great idea. Why not?
Yes. Anybody else have anything else we want to say before we wrap up here?
Not really. I feel like I'm all talked out. All
right. I guess. Well, thanks for the questions, listeners, and thanks to everyone for listening, period. If you're here right now, thanks for being here. We're glad that you listen to our podcast. We hope you appreciate / enjoy it. And yeah, if you have anything you want to say to us, if you would like to weigh in, if you'd like to participate in the conversation, you can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. You should rate us and review us on iTunes. It's very helpful. And you can also contribute, become a supporter on Patreon, patreon.com/badend. If you do that, you can get access to our Discord. And you can also get access to our game club where we do a game stream and we stream some video games and talk about them. And we're going to be doing that pretty soon. We will announce that in the Discord. So keep an eye out for that. And we are part of Super Culture Network, as a reminder, which includes Bullet Points, which is like a sister show of ours. Check them out. It's a podcast and website. And we also have Savoir Faire, the Disco Elysium podcast. We wrapped up that game a bit ago, so you can check out all of the episodes there. And I think that just about does it. Thanks again for listening, folks. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Later.